morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, and we have a wonderful candidate for the state senator here, right, Mike?
We do. Felicia French is a stellar candidate, the kind of Democrat we get from time to time, and it's really this is a dream candidate, actually. Good morning, Felicia.
Mike, I apologize. Thank you for having me on the show.
Tell us a little bit about, you came close to winning last time, right, Felicia? You ran for the state house last night, not for the state senate.
Yes, last year it was the state house. I came within 577 votes from winning.
Out of how many, do you remember?
I think it was 130-something thousand.
130-something thousand, and you came within 500 votes of winning. And now you've switched from running for the state house to running for the state senate. Why did you do that?
Well, I figured I'd try something different, and it was just nobody else had expressed an interest in running in this district because it is a very difficult district for a progressive Democrat. My team encouraged me. I wanted to listen to them. They were so supportive throughout the year, and we all got together and looked at the stats and said, you know, let's do it. So I said, okay,
Do you know who you'll be running against on the Republican side? I guess the first question, Felicia, I'm jumping ahead of myself. Are you going to have a primary, going to have a Democratic candidate primary, or are you just going pretty much straight to the general election?
I think, at this point, pretty much straight to the general election for me. But right now, Bob Thorpe and Wendy Rogers have put their hat in for the Senate, and Sylvie Allen is the incumbent right now. And I'm not sure, she said she wasn't going to run, and then now it looks like she might run again. So anyway, those would probably be my three contenders there.
And I would think, and I think Mike would agree with me, these are three of the worst representatives and senators in the state of Arizona, the most extreme. It's not even conservative. I mean, in Sylvia Allen's case, she's kind of nutty. And Bob Thorpe's sake, he's very, very strange, weird, far-out libertarian. And Wendy Rogers is just kind of...
Well, with the one calling for the end of Social Security.
Right. Yeah, I mean, she kind of... folks, you know, they want to get rid of your Social Security. Wake up, you know.
Felicia, yeah. I know I was talking about you being a dream candidate. I know that... you're a humble woman, and so I want to read a little bit of your bio here. Straight out of your webpage, you talk about being a solutions-oriented public servant, retired Army colonel with 32 years of military service, Afghan war veteran, Army medical evacuation helicopter pilot, registered nurse and educator, volunteer with Search and Rescue Civil Air Patrol, third generation Arizonan, a 55-year resident of Arizona, which means a lot to me and a lot of other Arizonans and people that have adopted Arizona as their state. Which is easy to do. As much fun as the rest of the world makes of Arizona, we know how special it is, don't we?
Yes, we do. Very much so. In fact, I just walked across it. 800 miles 2 weeks ago, finished up the two hikes of the Arizona Trail. So I even know more now how wonderful it is and why I, you know, choose to stay here.
So you walked all the way from the southern border to the northern
Mexican
border?
Arizona border to the Utah-Arizona border, yeah.
Yeah. I've walked on about 2 miles of the Arizona Trail, about as far as I got up in Flagstaff. Very, very beautiful up there.
I think I walked across
it. Yeah. The whole state is beautiful, but some portions of the trail are more difficult than others, of course, and... So it makes it a little bit more enjoyable to see the scenery when you're not trying to climb over boulders or bushwhack your way through the trail that's overgrown.
Yeah. All right. So you spent your career in the military working closely with people, sometime in, I guess, stressful, extreme situations, and also, you know, as a leader, a manager, a commander to some extent. So you think this helps prepare you for candidacy. It certainly you were a strong candidate last time, and incredible stick-to-itiveness, and incredible willingness to work. How do you think all of this prepared? 32 years in the military, now you're out in civilian life, and you've done some great volunteer work. I hope you're on my helicopter when they come get me out of one of the places. As I just say, you can save my butt.
There you go.
Well, I think in military service, any public service, you know, I consider teachers public servants, Peace Corps volunteers, AmeriCare, those sort of people, Doctors Without Borders, all those are public service. Anybody who's obviously not in it for the money, they're doing a greater good. And as far as the military goes, you are kind of thrown in with people from all walks of life. Non-American citizens are there in the enlisted ranks, and you travel all over the world to austere environments, underdeveloped countries, and you learn to work with people from all these places and all walks of life, under coalition forces from different countries. And so you pretty much have to learn to be a team player and to collaborate. And I look at our politics here in Arizona, as well as everywhere else, is like that. You have people from all walks of life and different ideas, and you have to learn to work together in order for a greater good, a common cause. And you have to collaborate in order to get things done. You can't just stick to your position.
How did you approach, say, I don't call colleagues, but allies from very different cultures? So you're in Afghanistan, and the people of our allies have very, very different ideas and very, very different backgrounds as human beings. How do you approach people who start from such a different place than you do?
Well, I think the first thing you look for is your commonality. You know, we're all human. We all have the same, you know, ideas as far as we care about safety, security of ourselves, of our people, of our country. That's very important, near and dear to everyone's heart, no matter what country you're from. And your family. Everyone cares about their family, protecting them and making sure they have the most opportunities for education, food, housing, all that.
Why is it so hard to convince Republicans that Afghans love their families and that Hispanics love their family? Why don't Republicans get that, Felicia? Can you help me out here?
Well, I don't know that they don't get it. Maybe it's not in the forefront of their mind, and sometimes you just have to remind them of that. I think people get so stuck in their own position and I think a lot of people haven't traveled. They don't know that. They haven't seen, they haven't lived with or been in an underdeveloped country or in a community in their own neighborhood that's minority. And so they don't understand them. And that's where the problem lies. That's why when you're in the military, you're forced to be amongst people you don't know or different walks of life. And that's the beauty of it. So you get an understanding, you feel for them, you have empathy. And I think a lot of people don't travel like that. When they do travel, they travel to the 5-star resort or whatever. So
that's
right.
People
like
protected. So we have Muslim allies. You worked in Dominican Republic. Very different people who are allies and friends of the United States. And that's how you do it. You look for commonality.
Right.
Did it work? Did it work pretty well? Were you able to relate to people who are very, very different?
Oh, without a doubt. When people see that you're trying to get along with them and trying to understand them, they're more apt to try and do the same for you. And they can see that you're struggling. You're trying to either speak their language, abide by their customs and their culture as much as you possibly can, and that you're there to help them. You know, that's what's nice about the military and the medical arena. You know, you can do so many humanitarian missions, and that's kind of a universal language. And you're helping their child is burnt out. You know, regardless of, you know, what they're wearing or where they come from, or if they're, you know, so-called enemy or not, they see that. They appreciate that. And you're trying to ease their pain literally and figuratively. They very much appreciate that. And so when it comes time, you leave a village after helping with medical help with their children or themselves. They're going to, when the Taliban or the enemy comes and they want to, you know, attack American bases, they're like, hey, you know, those people aren't as bad as these guys are making them out to be. You know, and there I noticed we had less attacks on our bases when we would go out and do these humanitarian missions. So it does help to look at them as human beings and treat them that way.
One of the things that Steve is certainly trying to talk about is how to get along with those people that have a different point of view. But since the traitor in the White House conspired with a foreign government to steal an election, I've become hyper-partisan, Felicia. So I know we're talking to Felicia French. She's running for state senate, Senate of Arizona, and that's, you know, 100,000 miles from the federal government. However, my hyper-partisanship, I don't see a party there that you can work with. I see a criminal organization. But you're gonna tell me, and you're gonna tell the audience, how are you gonna work with this, what I consider the criminal organization, otherwise known as the Republican Party?
Well, I understand that people can feel that way. You know, believe me, I sometimes feel that way too. But we have to, at the end, we have to work together. We don't have a choice. It's for the great, everyone wants a secure country. We want, our children fed. We want public education. Quality education for our children and all. No matter who they are, and we have to work together for solutions and come to that common good.
It may not be
exactly what we want or they want, but if somewhere in between, we can come to a mutual agreement and that works for everyone, a win-win solution. And that's what I always look for, a win-win. It may not be 100% what you want it or they want, like I said, but there's a win-win.
So your approach is basically...
Nobody has to lose.
Your approach is basically nonpartisan. You look at things in a nonpartisan way.
Yeah, I try very hard to. It's important to, because again, if we, just like with the military, if you alienate, if you demonize and dehumanize your enemy, that's where you get these atrocities and things, and then nothing gets done. All you do is make your enemy angrier and more, and the children grow up hating us, and it kind of works the same way in politics. You can't dehumanize people or demonize them. You've got to see their humanness, and in order to work with them.
How are you going to get to the state senate? What the campaigns to me are a mystifying, to me a horrible experience. And you did one, and now you're embarking on a second one. So that right there alone shows a fortitude that is certainly beyond my simple strength. So how are you going to get, how's Felicia French going to get in? You have a great track record because you came so close, but how are you going to get in?
Well, a lot of the strategy we used last time, I have a wonderful team of folks in Sedona, a group of women and folks that have been extremely supportive, helping out, going up, knocking on doors, and just overall just helping me in any way they can. And tap into that again, as well as, you know, door to door. The number one way to meet people and just disarm them. It's hard to say no or be, you know, mean to someone who's at your door. Just, hey, asking to sign my petition or talking to you about issues. I'm there. I'm going out of my way in the heat or the cold, whatever, because I honestly care about you, whether you vote for me or not. If I win, I'm still going to be your representative, you know, your senator. One way or the other, I want to know what your feelings are. What are your concerns? Because more than likely they're similar to ours, and just again, it's a different solution, perhaps. But we can get to something that will work for you as well. And so that's how I go door to door is the main way to do it. Calls, but my favorite thing to do is going door to door and talking one on one to people, and small group settings, people, house parties, those kind of things. And just like I do everything else in my life, just be persistent as heck and just keep going at it. Just like I finished the trail.
So you know, personal contact.
I was in pain halfway through, and, you know, I just keep going, put one foot in front of the other, and just maybe I'm going for punishment, but I just believe in something as worthwhile as this. We have a lot of issues in our state, and I really, really care deeply. And I consider the alternative of just allowing things to go as they are, I can't see that in the future. And so I feel like I have to get out there and run, and that's why I'm doing it and willing to sacrifice my time and energy because the what's at risk is so great.
What are the principal issues you see, Felicia, in running? What do you think are the most, are not all of them, but some of the more important issues in the state? What would you pick as the top three?
Funding public education is one of the largest issues. I mean, across the board, everyone. We saw it last year. Everyone was on board about funding public education, and we talked about it, but it still hasn't been done. This legislative year, they didn't do much, if anything, for it. So we do need to ensure that we fund public education there, so our teachers get paid, on par with what the national average. As well as our classroom sizes, we need to make sure that the student-teacher ratio is appropriate, funding all-day kindergarten and preschool, making college tuition affordable, those kind of things. And also, I've talked about this a lot, is trade schools and vocational schools are really important because not college isn't for everyone. So we need to start looking at, making those available for our young adults to give them choices in the world. And then and healthcare, of course, everyone's concerned about healthcare. Or should be, if they're not. Maybe you have, some of us have our health care insurance, but others don't. A large percentage of populations do not. And we have Medicaid for All in Arizona, which is a wonderful thing. Not all states do that, and that's kind of helped with that. We have access. But we need, there's still a lot of Arizonans and people are not covered.
The Republicans vilified Jan Brewer when she allowed Medicaid to come into Arizona, which goes back to my criminal. And yeah. I want to jump back to education for just a second. Your candidacy has a special resonance for a lot of us because Sylvia Allen has been chair of the Education Committee for the last 20 years, 18 or 19 anyway. So whatever education is or isn't in Arizona pretty much lands on her desk. She has supported the horrible 30 years of cuts to public education in Arizona. So getting her out of the Senate is really is more important for some of us than others that really want to see education improve.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. Just in general, we have to see our legislators with. Where they work, what kind of businesses they own, because there's sometimes a conflict of interest in that. Like if you own a charter school and you're voting on issues of public education, you're going to have a conflict of interest there. So that's obviously quite a big problem having to do with education right now in Arizona.
So you take the legislators that have a vested financial interest in charter schools may not make clear and honest decisions for the people of Arizona.
they
would make decisions
and
that
benefit. They recuse themselves from anything having to do with education or not be on a committee having to do with education.
Huge connections. They make vast amounts of money while they're legislature and deciding on the legislation, and they make money out of it for themselves, and they write laws that say that what they're doing is not conflict of interest. It's astonishing.
And Felicia, they lied and hid, so I'm going to ask you, do you have any interest in a charter school? Do you own a school somewhere?
No, I don't own any schools or any healthcare facilities or anything like that. No, I'm an educator. I taught at community college in ASU for a little bit, and I just helped with a program that was run by the National Guard called Project Challenge. It was for high school dropouts, and it was a at-risk youth program for high school dropouts that was a wonderful pilot program after in 91 when they did the base realignment and closure, and soldiers were coming back from the Gulf War. And, hey, what can we do with these soldiers? You know, a lot of them are, highly educated. And we also have this high dropout rate of high school kids. And so we married them up and did like a five-month boot camp type training and at the old Williams Air Force Base. And I was a commandant of that, and it was wonderful. I also taught, and it really, the high school, at that time in Arizona, it was like over the kids that dropped out of high school most of them ended up in jail or, on the street, homeless. And after that program, those kids, most of them ended up in either going to advanced education, college, community college, trade school, at EBIT, or they went on to military service. Or some other public service, but so we found out that worked very well. But I taught some there, and to me, I see it. You invest in the children early in education; those are our future. If you want to look at it from an economic standpoint, those are our future taxpayers, and so our tax base. If you have these kids aren't in the military or in the education, are not educated to go to school or not and work, they're not going to be contributing members of society. and help. And it's horrible. It's a shame. We owe it to them to provide them all the tools they need to be successful in life.
Just you mentioned. Clear, oh, I'm sorry, Mike.
You're running. You're running an LD6. What do you see as the problem areas? You talked about personal contact as your strategy. Any way you can get it, whether it's a house party, whether it's knocking on a door, you feel that Felicia French showing up at a voter's door is the way to win this election, and it probably is. But what areas are going to be the problem areas, or what do you see? A lot of us, we know we live in LD6, we live in Legislative District 6, but we don't know the other.
Yeah.
You got to represent the whole district. So where are the problems?
Right. Well, I think people aren't. I think they get to sensory overload. We have so much information coming at us nowadays. You know, for all it's good, the internet and social media, we have so much false information, as we know, from what happened at the election, in 2018 as well. They get in misinformation, so they don't know what to believe. So that's why I think when you go door-to-door at in-person events, they can see it. You know, they hear you right there. They can see what you're saying. And they can ask questions directly from you, and they can see, you know, people can see whether you're genuine or not when you're telling them stuff. And so I think that's important in that respect. But in our district, and as in any place in the United States, the people, they don't have time to look at the news, or they pick and choose what they want to listen to because it fits their argument. And that's why education is so important, to raise critical thinkers from, you know, kindergarten on up, raise people to think and question things, and don't just accept one. You know, look at peer-reviewed documents and science and all that and trust it. Or, you know, but at the same time, with the element, hey, let me research this a little bit more if it sounds a little fishy. But our education system hasn't been like that, so we don't have a lot of people that think critically and intellectually curious enough to verify something or see if it's, you know, false.
I'm also looking for some inside information here, and maybe this campaign strategy stuff is not something you want to give away on the air. But what I'm looking for is what sections of the district are you going to be special problems for you or special rewards for you? You do well in Flagstaff, but not so well in Rimrock. And what's going on with that kind of strategy part?
Well, I think I just need to be there. And I did. Last time I went to every little village. There's 36 townships in our district, LD6. And I hit everyone, but you can't hit every person, obviously, because they're all spread out. But I would go to trailers to see something of this. Some of them were like, there were 5 trailers to a mile. I would just go. It's time consuming, and I know people get mad at me for just, hey, you need to concentrate on more, you know, getting out there. Some people on my team say, hey, you got to count in the more densely populated areas, but at the end of the day, everyone deserves a voice, and I want to hear what they have to say, and I want to get out there. And so it's going to take more time. I'm starting earlier. That's probably the only strategy I'm using right now that I didn't use last time, is trying to start earlier and hitting more doors. But there's no secrets to any of this. It's just about, you know, if you care enough, you want to go and see it. I mean, an ideal world is to hit every single door that's in my district. And I don't know that that's possible. At least it's a goal to shoot for.
You mentioned vocational education. What really needed, Felicia, is state funding for vocational higher education. So you get out of high school there somewhere for you can
right.
go to learn strategies and stuff. This is a very highly underfunded area, I would say, now.
Yes, and even we used to have them in our high schools. I'm sure you guys are about my age, I know. We had that in high school. We had woodshop mechanics, welding at some schools. Those electrical engineering, for electricians, and just different vocations, even in high school, to get so kids could start from there and get an idea of what they wanted to be. And in Europe, there's vocational schools, and they're very well regarded. They're paid well. And we need that. We don't have our workforce, our manual labor workforce is diminishing. And college isn't for everyone. Not everyone wants to go on to get a college degree. They want to work with their hands and do these kind of things. And so let them. They'll be more successful, be happier, and they'll still be contributing to our society.
According to some memes I've seen.
We need to fund it along with our universities.
According to some things I've seen in social media, Tennessee just made community college free. Do you see that ever happening in Arizona?
I would love to. Honestly, I would. I know in Gila Community College here where I am, we are free to people 55 and older. So believe it or not, people think, well, why would they want to go to? We have so many. I take some classes there. I took Master Gardening there. I took Climate Change in the Southwest there because I want to see what's going on over here and adaptation. I think that's a really good idea to let our older people go back to school to learn and make them more aware of what's going on. But at the same time, our younger people need that as well. So, yeah, I would love to see community colleges free, or that they have, you know, just it's been proposed before that they have to maintain a certain grade point average and give back. So just like the military, you know, you go through training. Some of the training in the military is you like the academy. You get 3 years public excellent education, but you have to serve for so many years, depending on, you know, what you graduate as. So I think we should, you know, that would be something that would be everyone benefits from.
As we talk to Arizona, so real Arizonans, jobs are an issue. They really are. I don't care what they say on the Wall Street Journal. There's a lack of jobs, there's a lack of good jobs, and there's low wages. Can a state senator do something about that?
Yeah, in the rural area, much more so, we have problems with jobs, keeping our children here, and like in Payson, where I live closer to it here in Pine. It's hard to keep our young kids when they graduate from high school here for jobs. So one of the things we can do, and this is, again, a win-win situation, is the renewable energy sector. It's three times more jobs in the renewable energy sector than the fossil fuel sector. So we can look at that, a win-win getting jobs, good, clean jobs for these kids that they're not getting, you know, in coal mines where they're being breathing in the horrible coal dust, and they're learning new jobs, new modern jobs that last them, for, you know, a lifetime. And as well as now we can have cleaner air, cleaner water, in addition to it. If people don't care about those kind of things, well, what about the job part of it? And they actually end up making more money in the renewable energy sector jobs than they do in the fossil fuel jobs.
And some of it looks a little dangerous, though. Police, I mean, climbing around on those giant wind generators, that looks kind of scary, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something everybody's going to want to do. I mean, I know it pays well, but.
They're tethered pretty well. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Just like in the military, when you're in the back of a helicopter, Chinook or something, you're tethered in there pretty darn well. Yeah.
So not to worry as much fantasize about these guys climbing around trying to fix things up, you know, hundreds of feet in the air.
Yeah, that's not for me either, but hey, there's people that enjoy doing that, and let them do it.
Amen.
So Mike brought up jobs. I mean, one of the serious problems is if I look at the newspaper in Sedona, there's lots of jobs, but there are very few jobs that will hold our younger people here in town that are good enough or that have a ladder up to some kind of success. There's a lot of beginner jobs that will be beginner jobs forever. Is there anything the state legislature could do about that?
Again, that brings you back to just multiple ways of getting an education and different and courses, the community college, the vocational schools. Our children have choices to pick from what they want to do. Internet now, that's another reason why you need broadband internet in these rural areas, so that our kids can have access to this information, and they can work from, you know, if they want to work from home, they can. And reduce their cost, their overhead, you know, overhead and all that, doing those kind of things. My daughter's an example. She works from, you know, wherever there's internet, she can work there, because that's the type of job, the nature of her job. A lot of millennials are doing that, working up. He's making money and monetizing the internet. So there are ways to do it. And then, of course, obviously, these young people, giving them a small business, entrepreneurial job creation in the rural area is important. We help them small business loans. You know, over 50% of the jobs in the United States come from small businesses, actually. So we definitely need, and when the market goes bad or something happens, they get affected, but they also tend to weather much better. You don't have massive layoffs like you do when big corporations go under. So we do need to emphasize the small businesses.
I want to talk about veterans. I'm a veteran. You're a veteran. There's still some huge issues with veterans in the state of Arizona. can you see a time, or can you see a way to eliminate homeless veterans in the state of Arizona? Which is there a way to target these? You know, used to be during the Vietnam era that, you know, 6, 8, 10% of the population had some connection to the military. Now I understand it's 1 or 1.5%. The military is not even an afterthought in most people's minds. How can we take care of our veterans?
Well, it is sad, and then, you know, obviously we both speak personally from this, and it's a lot of these folks coming back from war zones and all, just like our World War II, Korean War veterans, Gulf War veterans, all the veterans in the past. They need help, whether it be, you know, for physical or mental health. And sometimes they don't even know they need help, or they don't, because they have mental health issues, they don't realize they need help or where to get it. I had one of my soldiers, it was horrible. I mean, she was working there for the estate, and she was not coming to work after she got back from Afghanistan, and one of her supervisors brought her in and said, "Look, ma'am, something's not right with her. They sent her back from Walter Reed, and they said that, you know, hey, you can see the VA or whatever, but you can't see there's anything wrong." Well, when I researched it, she had been exposed to traumatic brain injury eight times. She had a concussion, and never was it addressed. So her brain, she had traumatic brain injury, and so outwardly you can't see what's wrong with her. But anyway, it was like a, you know, shaken baby syndrome type thing, where the brain, or football injury, head injury, and so she couldn't think well. She couldn't understand what was going on. So we need to make sure that those people don't fall through the cracks like that. So she wasn't able to work properly. And so I was able to get her back on active duty to get taken care of, because we had no means to take care of her there in at the VA in Arizona. And those are sort of things that we need to make sure that doesn't happen. It was sad. I couldn't believe it. That this poor girl has been, you know, was been floating around, not able to function properly. And what could have happened? She would probably ended up on the street. And we see veterans end up on the street because they don't know where to go get help. So we need to identify them after they come out of the military and make sure they go through some kind of a process, review process. I did when I came back. Now, before I went, they had to do a test, just a cognitive type test, and then when you came back, just to kind of see how you answered. And then and long term, that fell through the cracks. We weren't able to do that. Now we need to make sure we do that to see, hey, where they need, and follow up, have somebody following up on them, case managers, so that if they need help here or there, we can make sure they get it.
So just checking up on them and getting people to come and talk and checking up on them and following them when they leave the military and become veterans, that's important too. And
yeah.
You actually had to get her back on active duty in order to get the kind of help she needed. She hadn't was on there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad because we didn't have, you know, think about the war. Almost 6% of the soldiers that deployed this ongoing war have been National Guard and Reserves. We never had that before. It was always almost all active duty personnel. So they have their bases there, their hospitals there, their support system with their families there, their whole unit. And so if they do get injured or wounded, they come back to their home base where their hospital is, their military hospital. When you have somebody, deploy somebody from like Arizona Army National Guard, we don't have a military hospital here. We have the VA, but it's not made for those kind of injuries. You know, it's made for afterwards, you know, for smaller operations, more elective type stuff down the road. It wasn't designed for an active duty injuries, combat related type injuries. So we'd have to collate they came either at a military base somewhere else, and then they're away from their support systems, their families can't see them, all that. And that's where you have the Fisher houses come in to help the families so they can stay there while their loved one is getting, you know, taken care of. But and that was very problematic, and that's one of the jobs I oversaw in the Arizona Army National Guard before I deployed to Afghanistan, was making sure those soldiers coming back were cared for, and they got a proper location and where they needed the care the most.
I think
I'm going to switch topics here real quick. A lot of our listeners in Sedona, the single issue for them is climate science. I believe that government at every level can help as they do with once again the criminal organization known as the Republican Party and their climate science denial is putting us all at incredible risk. What can Felicia French do? Felicia French, candidate for LD6, we're chatting with this morning. How can you help the climate disaster that's looming?
Well, one of the things is but cities have a huge impact on that. And a lot of the cities are going against what the federal side says. Hey, if you're not going to do this, we're going to keep our strict standards. Cities have can do that. I came back from, I got out, I retired, and I went back to school to get my grad degree in sustainable solutions at Arizona State. And that is, obviously climate change is a huge part of that. And solutions are financially feasible. If you equate it like I was talking about infrastructure jobs. We need jobs here in this area. Building up the infrastructure. Part of that is the grid, the electric grid, renewing that. Solar, replacing fossil fuels with solar. That creates jobs and it cleans the air. It helps with all that. So sustainable solutions is not just a term. It actually is a win-win situation. You get clean air, clean water as a result of using renewable energy, and then you also clean up the air and the water. So those are things that we can, twofold. We can, help create jobs, increase the infrastructure, threefold actually, build up our infrastructure as well as create jobs.
Have you had a chance to look at how climate change will affect Arizona specifically? Obviously, we're not. Yes. It's not Florida. I don't think we're going to be underwater anytime soon.
We've already been affected by it. Look at the forest fires. Our fires, we get a lot of lift last year. We had a lot of precipitation and snowfall and rain. But then what that causes is a lot of growth of brush and all that, even in desert areas. And then it dries out because they go longer periods without rain or any precipitation. So it dries out. Now it's just fuel for a fire. And that's what we have at the Woodbury right now is all that caused by. I hiked right through it just a month before that fire. And I saw, that's why we couldn't see the trail a lot of times, because the growth of all the grass that grew because of the unusual amount of rain in that short period. And then now it grew a lot of grass, and now it's all dried out because now we're going back into a dry period, which isn't normal for this. See, that's the difference between weather and climate. Weather is short-term, a year, what the weather is going to be out for the four seasons. Climate is long-term,
right.
So gradually over the years. And that's getting people to understand that, hey, this drastic change in this last since the Industrial Revolution, since we started burning fossil fuels, has caused this. And that's the science behind it. That's a fact. That's not opinions or anything. I have seen it firsthand in Arizona. The forest fires used to have a fire season was just pretty much the summer period. My brother-in-law is the public affairs officer for the fire here, and also he's over on the Woodbury fire right now. And he was saying how it's short term. Now it's pretty much almost year round the fire season, and we saw that in California in October. The places where towns are burning. So we see it here firsthand in Arizona, and we're going to be affected by it. And then plus the air you breathe now because of that smoke and the soot, it's unhealthy for us to breathe that in.
That's another of the
population too that has
another Felicia. Another to get it in before we run out of time. Another issue that's really important in Sedona is local control, and we have a breaking story we're going to do. Next week, we're going to have the mayor of Sedona, Sandy Moriarty, here. And it's about short-term rentals and the fact that the governor and the legislature has passed laws that keep the cities from being able to control short-term rentals. When I went to Airbnb, for example, we would be at Sevilla, Spain, and a professor would have an extra apartment and he would rent it out to you. It was one-on-one. Now what we're seeing coming to Sedona is giant built from the ground Airbnb or vacation by owner. So they start out, so there'll be like six apartments, each with a bathroom, a huge kitchen area, a family area, and these are built in residential areas. And what the legislature and the governor has done has made it so the cities can't regulate them. And think about having these giant structures in your neighborhood or next to your house. I mean, I think people in Sedona are overprotective about this kind of thing, Mike. But this case, this is really serious.
Yeah,
they're not going to be regulated, Mike, as Airbnb, bed and breakfast or hotels or anything. They're just going to be able to build these structures wherever they have the land. And in the case of Sedona, we're seeing the structures built built by out-of-state groups, corporations,
and who don't have a vested interest in their community.
Nothing. They're not here at all. Not here at all, Felicia. So we're going to have Mayor Sandy Moriarty in and talk about this issue next week. But we also need help from the legislature. It's hard for us to understand how, and I think Mike would be more pissed about it than I am, is to how these guys can preach, you know, states' rights and how they can ignore the federal government, and then they turn around and they won't let the cities govern themselves. They won't let them regulate, like, simple things like housing.
Well, that's the way I want to frame it. They not only, deregulation is one thing, and then and in many cases I'm sure it's good. But not only did they deregulate the vacation rental business, they're protecting the outside investment. They by denying local control, this is a step beyond. This is a bit of insanity.
And what's happening is these short-term rentals are changing from being people actually renting out a room in their house or a vacation home.
They're not their income.
They're now corporations building giant structures and calling them, and they'll be unregulated. And it's just beginning, Felicia. So hopefully, what can you do down in Phoenix to help us get some local control over our housing here?
Well, I totally agree with local control. I mean, like you said, our state legislators have this big beef with the federal government telling the states what to do, but now they're trying to tell the cities what to do. And so it's the same thing. And so I think people need to have the township, cities need to have their say, bring the stakeholders together and decide what's best for their community. Because they know best. Each one of those, my 36 townships in my district are different. And they have their different needs and issues and interests. So they need to be able to say, get the folks together in the community and decide what's best for the overall community. Now, again, that being said, unless it's something against, you know, it's a civil rights issue, they're going to ban, you know, certain groups of people from the types of people, or race or religion or whatever, that's a different story, you know, when it starts infringing on people's civil rights. But this is not. This is actually, it's been detrimental. In Oak Creek, they had to close a school down. Because the housing was so expensive, people couldn't live there, so the families had to move farther away. And so this, you know, here we're closing a public school because of that. And I really think that especially when you have an outside company coming in, just like we have a Canadian company doing the Rosemond mine on the Arizona Trail, they're closing down a part of the trail because a Canadian company is opening up a copper mine there. Now all those people are going to be affected by it, and the water and everything. So, if people have a say on what's best for their community, they should. That's how it's supposed to be. The stakeholders are the people that are actually going to be affected by it, and those are the local people, and local control is very, very important.
Well, yes, and getting the stakeholders together, as you just said, is kind of the key to that. And Pierce says, mining inspector, your fellow Democrat is still campaigning. I think it's wonderful that you guys kind of took a breath and decided to head for a campaign. Listen, Felicia, we're running out of time. I want to tell everybody that Felicia French's website is easy to find on the internet. You can find out, it's well written, it's very attractive. Take a look at it, find out a little more about Felicia French for State Senate in Legislative District 6, our district. And certainly give her support. She's gathered a lot of support from women, and I'm sure she's looking for more. We want to remind everyone that, you can find this interview on our website, Verde Valley Independent Democrats. We have all our shows on there. You can listen to Felicia's comments. You can, hit the donate button. You can hit the comment button and talk to us about, BBID.org is our website, and Democratic Perspective is our show. See you next week.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.